Hour number three of Darren and Donick here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here in Jack Daniels Barrel House inside Bridgestone Arena. Tonight it's the Predators and the Winnipeg Jets. 7 o'clock puck drop. I'll have pregame for you at 6. Everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. Speaking of that, don't forget Frugal McDougal at 701 Division Street in Nashville this Saturday from 3 until 5 p.m. Another chance for you to win a pair of tickets on the Yeehaw Brewing Company Predators bus trip to see the Predators take on the Blues in St. Louis on Saturday, February 9th. You must be 21 years of age to enter. We opened that up, I don't know, a month and a half ago, Willie, on this show. We did it, unveiled that trip on this show in a matter of hours. It was sold out. So another chance for you to be a part of that, but you must go by Frugal McDougal at 701 Division Street on Saturday from 3 until 5 p.m. We say hello to Richard Deitch. His work can be found at The Athletic. Richard, how you doing? Happy New Year.
You can't say Frugal McDougal a lot. I like the sound of that.
Yeah, it is definitely unique. It stands out, and it's something you should be able to remember. So how are things with you?
Well, better with me than with the Toronto Maple Leafs, who are struggling here in my fine city. But things are good. No complaints. It's cold. It's cold in the Great White North here. We're looking at 15, 16 degree temperatures today.
It's ironic that you bring that up, because Willie and I were thinking about you yesterday, because obviously the Predators just came off their longest road trip of the year, which happened to be up in Toronto in the middle of that trip, and Predators shut them out 4-0. And like you said, things are not great at this particular moment, and you know how that landscape is up there. Now that you've been up there, Willie experienced it for a short amount of time. They eat, drink, and everything. Maple Leafs, hockey.
Because they're good. I mean, right. they have a great team.
So how crazy is it? You're up there every day. How crazy is it every day?
Well, I mean, you know, hockey is far and away the sport of Canada. And in the city of Toronto, it's a hockey mad city for sure. They're into the Raptors as well, and the Jays when they play well. But, you know, Canada, hockey is cultural in Canada. It goes beyond sports. It's sort of ingrained in what the country's, you know, ethos and philosophy is about. And you're right, the Leafs are good. The question is, at least this moment, what does that mean when the Lightning are clearly better than them? And I think there are teams in the Western Conference, including the Preds and the Jets, that are better than the Leafs. So they're going to have a big decision in the next couple weeks. You know, do they decide to go for it this year? And if they do, what do they give up to improve? But they're, you know, like many teams in the NHL, they have kind of two windows. They have a window this year, and then they're going to have a window in the future. But they have contractual contracts coming up to Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews, and you can't keep everybody. So it's kind of an interesting time for the Maple Leafs. They are a very good team, but they're not a complete team, and what they are next year is going to be different. So I would, you know, again, I don't cover the team on a day-to-day basis, but I would expect them to make some kind of deal. I think they kind of have to go for it given their cap situation.
Well, of course, your blog, of course, Richard, is called The Media Circus, and I thought of you just because you're up there. In what I've been reading about, and for people don't even need to understand who the player is necessarily here to sort of relate, but there's a defenseman named Jake Gardner who's a very good player. He's had some struggles. He had a really bad Game 7 last year, so part of it goes back to that. But they have just been booing him mercilessly. It is so hard, I would imagine, to play in that city sometimes when you're going through tough times. And there's a lot of people sort of fighting back, former players a lot of times saying, hey, this is not helping when you do this to a guy. I think of David Price in Boston, who sort of played through it, overcame it, as playing for the Red Sox. But when you're in such a fishbowl like that, it can be very, very hard for a player if he's struggling.
Yeah, you know, I mean, booing happens everywhere. Booing's kind of it's both an interesting and a weird thing. If you pay your ticket, you clearly obviously have the right to express however you feel about an event or a player or a coach, you know, within the confines of no racism, you know, no sexism, et cetera. I'm sure in some places you can't curse, but, you know, let's be honest, it's just not realistic. But it doesn't necessarily ever motivate at least if you talk to athletes, like the player, like no player is going to play, I think, better just because they got booed. So it's kind of an interesting thing in that a lot of times it can affect the player, but it can affect the player in the wrong way. And that's ultimately kind of, I would think, not what you want as a fan. In certain cases, and you've seen this a little bit with Jake Gardner, it may pass, but some players, for whatever reason, become the symbol of fans' frustration. And that player, whether rightly or wrongly, sort of gets booed during live events, gets talked about way too much on the radio or written about. And that happens in a lot of franchises, not just here in Toronto, but I think elsewhere. A lot of times that player ends up leaving. Sometimes that's for the better of the team. Other times it is not. In this city, Larry Murphy essentially got booed out of town, went on to win Stanley Cups, and became one of the great defensemen in the league. So it doesn't always help, but it's a weird thing in 2019 because of, because of social media, where you can really get to players in a much direct way. The whole act of booing is, it still exists. I get it, but it feels like something from like 1970, to be honest.
So, Richard, looking at your latest blog, of course, you've got two really intriguing matchups in the AFC and NFC championship games on Sunday. You don't always have this, but is this maybe the formula you could have as good a ratings as you've had in a while for the championship Sunday?
No, you want the Jaguars in there. you're absolutely right. Yeah, I don't think the NFL could have scripted a better Final Four in that if you look at whatever the permutations will be with the Super Bowl, you have no bad matchup. I think there is, at least in terms of viewership or interest, there's probably a best matchup, but all four potential matchups are phenomenal. We've seen a couple of them, including that Chiefs-Rams game, 54-51, which is, game of the year, electric to watch. This is just my interpretation. I know there are some people who probably have Patriots fatigue, and you guys would have a better feel of that than me, given that you're in Nashville, which is very, very far away from New England. So you'd kind of be an independent arbiter of this. But to me, the league, and I'm sure I've said this on your show way too many times, the NFL markets itself through quarterbacks. That is essentially how this league has been run for 50-plus years, going back to, Johnny Unitas versus, whoever, Namath, to today when it's, Brady versus Goff. So if the Saints and the Patriots play, you have Breeze versus Brady, two Hall of Famers for sure, greatest quarterback in the history of the game in Brady. You have two guys who have not necessarily played against each other a lot. I looked this up. I think they've only played against each other five times during their career over, 16 years. You have two very, very huge fan bases that sort of tune into their football teams. They over-index their market size. And so I think in terms of potential matchups, at least to get crazy viewership if the game is close, I think that Patriots Saints one is it. At the same time, again, look at all those different matchups. You just have such interesting potential games because of the quarterbacks that are there. Mahomes, Goff, Breeze, and Brady, represent the future of the game, the present of the game, and the past of the game. So if the NFL has an incredible ratings year, and they have just hit it out of the park with this Final Four.
Yeah, they've got to be salivating for sure. Richard, one maybe on a note, we won't take as much time on this, but I know there are a lot of people in this listening area that have grown up because you can get 700 AM in Cincinnati, WLW, pretty easily, and there's a ton of people who for generations have been listening to Marty Brenneman, and he announced the other day that this will be his last year coming up. He's just one of those guys, there's not as many as there were that just spend such a long period of their career with one team, and he is just so synonymous with the Reds.
Yeah, and the same week, Steve Bless of the Pirates announced he was retiring at the end of 2019. So two iconic broadcasters. The one thing about Brenneman, and I've talked to him a couple of times, and obviously I know his history with the Reds, he is one of the few broadcasters, and he did this more earlier in his career than late, who would criticize the team.
I think he's the last.
He really, and it's no question about it.
Who
he is more unique. He's more unique than anybody that I've heard
Well, think about it today.
He's not afraid to do it.
Who would be in that category and get away with it? I would say none. I think he is the last of that dying breed, in my opinion.
He's up there in terms of the last of radio. The group in New York, Gary Cohen, Ron Darling, and Keith Hernandez sort of can get away with it a little bit. But again, you know, they're on TV. They have standing because two of those guys are very well known. Ron Darling has another job at Turner. So, you know, you have some flexibility when you have other employments to sort of be more honest. But Brenneman is so rare in terms of, you know, sort of like it's a sort of a cliche, like the old Howard Cosell cliche, but sort of telling it like it is when it has to be told. Having listened to so many Homer broadcasts over the years, and again, before I moved up here, you know, I had the Yankees, John Sterling and Susan Wallman, who are admittedly beloved by Yankee fans, but if you are not a Yankee fan, you know, you might as well be listening to, like, China Central Television. It's like, it's propaganda city. And so Brenneman basically is, he was kind of amazing that he did that. By the way, did that in a market in the Midwest where you'd kind of expect it to be the other way. Kind of expect the broadcaster to be an over-the-top homer like Hawk Harrelson. So he's had an incredible career, you know, an absolute Hall of Famer at what he did. And the other thing, too, is Brennemans are part of a dynastic broadcasting group. You know, his son, Tom, has had a great career. And, you know, when you think of, like, the all-time families of broadcasting, you know, the Careys, the Brennemans, the Alberts, you know, he's part of that very small fraternity of father-son broadcasters, both father and son having really significant careers.
He took over the booth in 1974, replacing...
Wow.
Al Michaels.
Yeah. How about that?
Good trivia.
Think about 74, meaning that he was there for the Big Red Machine.
Yep.
You know, Rose, Morgan, and Foster, all the way to the modern day Reds. That is incredible to just think about.
No doubt about it. Richard, good to hear you. Thanks for doing this. We'll do it again soon.
You got it. Take care, guys.
Richard Deitch, you can find his work at The Athletic. Let me talk to all the men out there. You've heard me talking about my friends over at Cool Springs MD, and over the years, they've been helping you get started when you've been seeking help for hormone deficiencies and imbalances. And Dr. Jeffrey Lodge, who is the board-certified doctor, Daphne Lodge, his wife, the registered nurse, along with their experienced staff, they want to give you men out there the treatments that are required to improve your quality of life. Who doesn't want that? Cool Springs MD services have already helped a lot of you here in the Middle Tennessee area with improving your immune systems, your energy levels, your cognitive function, and so much more. They're there to connect you with the medical care you require to have a healthy and enriched life. There is no better time to achieve that healthy lifestyle than right now. Make that appointment by dialing this number, 615-660-6900. That's 615-660-6900. You can always visit their website, coolspringsmd.com. Back here on Darren and Donick, we're here at Jack Daniels Barrel House inside Bridgestone Arena. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, always good to catch up with Gary Smith. Talk a little soccer with him, even though he's here in a hockey rink, which is, you know, he's used to hot atmospheres in the middle of the summer, and here he's in a cold hockey rink. Of course, he's the head coach, Nashville SC. Gary, how you doing?
I'm very well. Yeah, very well indeed.
I was just telling you, it's hard to believe – you're about ready to get things cranked up again as we sit here in the middle of January.
It's a long season. We get a small window of downtime. I have to say, I think we're all ready to get back on the field. Players have been trickling in this week, and they need to be back in town by tomorrow. And we're looking forward to getting going again and getting our teeth into a new season.
It is about to happen. By the way, season tickets are available now as low as $10 a game. You had great crowds in the inaugural season. Of course, you heard this morning on Morning Drive at 9 a.m. the announcement that we will again be the broadcast partner for the Nashville Soccer Club for this upcoming season on ESPN 94.9 Game 2. So we're very excited about that. And, hey, everybody should look forward to another great season. So how would you assess going in? You know, you truly never know, even though you've been through this before, you've been around this, but you never really know how that inaugural season's going to go. How, now that you've had a little time to reflect, how do you think it went?
I think we've laid some very strong foundations with the team, with some of the performances. There were certainly some markers that we wanted to lay down. Identity of the team, style of the team. I think the players that have competed in 2018 have certainly given this group that goes into 2019 a really nice platform. The difficulty would have been if it had if the team had faltered, if we really hadn't come together and bonded as a group. But I have to give tremendous credit to the players and of course to the staff in the way that they were able to really set out and offer the type of group that we are. We have wonderful characters, hard-working players, and of course very talented players. And I'd like to think that the fans that came and watched us play at home saw an entertaining team, an entertaining style. Of course we had our moments where goals were difficult to come by, but I think in the main we showed a lot of ambition in our play. We showed a lot of quality in our play, and I certainly feel as though the players connected terrifically with the fans and the support that we got.
Your job is on the field, but I think what jumped out at me is I remember having the conversation with you at Nissan Stadium for the CONCACAF Gold Cup, just getting to know you for the first time and how much you talked about this market and coming here and observing the market and the surroundings and what you were kind of signing up for and walking into. The Predators have been they've been proven through polls and magazines that they're the best in the business in professional sports of marketing their team and getting fan support and the whole experience, because today it's about the experience. It's not easy to get people to show up to sporting events like it was maybe in the past because of television and radio and what have you. What have you learned about this marketplace now that you've been here a year or so? And you guys had tremendous support at First Tennessee Park. You even played a game over at Nissan. What did you think?
I don't think anybody could have expected the type of atmosphere and the passion from the fans that we received. There were projections on maybe what the attendance would have looked like and season ticket sales and so on. But I think one of the things that's vitally important in soccer, you see it around Europe, and I've been immersed in it in the UK myself. It's the fans creating and building character around their own stadium, and a lot of the teams in Europe and South America have been around an awful lot longer than some of the franchises in this country. And it's not just about going and cheering for a team or being in attendance at a game. It's having being part of that fabric of the organization. And I think the fans did a wonderful job of coming together and not just supporting us, but making First Tennessee Park in our initial home such a great place to be. The players felt it, I know the staff felt it. My hope is that the fans enjoyed and look forward to being at First Tennessee Park throughout our first season and turn up in their droves again this year.
We're talking to Coach Gary Smith from Nashville SC. Today, if you missed the announcement, we announced a continued partnership with the Nashville Soccer Club to be the exclusive English-speaking station for Nashville SC on 94.9 Game 2. And Coach, I think back, as you were talking about the fans, and I got a chance to see a couple of games, it was so fun. There were some magical moments. You had the one game where you guys scored in the final minute, at stoppage time to win it. And I saw so many clips the next day, 2 days, of somebody's perspective. They happened to be filming or with their phone at that moment where we're in there. And I just thought to myself, okay, these guys now have – they're in. They're going to be emotionally in from here forward because you have magical moments like that. That's what keeps people coming back.
Yeah, they're all of the moments, the enjoyable, competitive, winning situations that over history a lot of other clubs have had, that they're memories that fans will be able to pass on to children and family members, and we're creating them right now. And you're right, there were some terrific moments. That goal by Rapapa that gave us a win in a game where, you know, we've been pushing and putting the Carolina goal under tremendous pressure, but it seemed like it was going to be one of those days that the goal had some sort of false field around it, and we were never going to get that vital moment to earn all 3 points. And you know, I've not witnessed many of those games where in the 94th minute we're able to however it comes bundle the ball over the line and win the game, and you know, fans go away, likewise players and staff, and you know, that's part of how organisations grow and they galvanise themselves. Certainly teams get through adversity, find a way to win on those occasions, and remember that when they move forward. And if you think about the final league game that we had against Cincinnati, they'd already been crowned champions, certainly in the season. We're looking forward to playoffs, both teams, knowing that we could well run into each other again, which we did. And it was one of the most exciting games of the season. I genuinely felt that they didn't want to meet us again and would have been quite happy to have beaten us or to put us in our place, as it were. And Bolu's, 90th minute equaliser in a 3-3 draw to end what was, a really exciting and fulfilling season, I would hope for all.
Well, one thing that I heard you say was at times goals were hard to come by, but at the same time, you guys had a great identity. You guys could shut teams down. I don't understand everything about style of play in soccer, but in a general sense, I know a coach has to balance, what is our identity? Are we a defense first, score second? What is our personnel? How do we have to play? As you guys advance now, you've built the foundation. Do you feel like you will play differently at all next year as your talent level starts getting better?
Yeah, I'm not sure it's a case of actually playing differently. I think the players will understand and appreciate each other a little bit more. We have added some experienced and very productive pieces to our front line. But I think in general, for me as a coach, making sure that the players understand the simple fundamentals of the game. If we concede more than the other team, we will lose. And no supporters, I believe in their right mind, want to watch a losing team. So it is a fine balancing act. It's an entertainment. I've always created teams that are well balanced. That means that we are difficult to play against when we need to be. We have good foundations for keeping the ball and being creative. The one thing we lacked at certain points in the season was an individual that could step up to the plate and really become that hero for the organisation. And the players did a terrific job of finding a way through to scoring goals. But I think we looked at the amount of opportunities created. We should have scored far more goals than we actually did at the end of the season. We've added some bodies that I hope are going to be able to achieve that. And with that missing dynamic in the team, there's still lots and lots of work to be done. But we have got a nice platform, as we spoke about earlier on. And the new additions, I'm sure, will push us further into a really competitive mode.
Can you ice skate?
there is every chance I would take two steps and fall over. My balance is dreadful. It would be a comedy sketch.
Well, Darren and I like to use the railing
The wall is our
just
friend.
Just in case, so we don't just flat out go down on the face.
Those guys that get around that ring at that pace and perform and compete as they do, that's phenomenal.
They make it look so easy at times you forget they're on a blade, on a sheet of ice.
Amazing athletes. Amazing. I don't understand the rules, but I do understand that they are amazing athletes.
And a lot of them are big soccer fans, I got to tell you. The guys, Philip Forsberg is right up there with anybody I've met. He loves soccer.
Right.
And so a lot of those guys I know have come to your games.
Well, likewise. I know a lot of my players are really excited by the games that these guys have. And I have to say, their form, the way that they perform and the way that they entertain has been fantastic.
The Swedish players definitely have taken
– They're all in.
Yeah, they're all in. By the way, your captain, Michael Reid, will join me tonight in pregame right in here.
Yeah, Austin just told me. I'll be looking forward to listening in on that one.
Yeah. He'll need to carry it, as you know. Just like when you come on, you know you need to carry it. So thanks for doing this, as always.
Always great to be here.
And lovely, we're great. We're very happy, by the way, to be a part of this again. So
likewise.
Keep up the good work.
Yeah. Good to see you both again.
That is Gary Smith. He is the head coach for Nashville SC. If you did not hear this morning and just now, we will again extend our broadcast partnership with them, and we're very excited about that. You can hear their games. By the way, they got a preseason game coming up. What, Nashville or New York City FC? MLS preseason game in February? February 22nd, is that right?
I'm not sure of that date, but you're there or thereabouts, and yet that will be – pretty much one of the highlights of our preseason build-up.
That's awesome.
I think it would be an incredible test for the group and also another wonderful occasion for the fans.
And we will carry that game. Gary, thanks for doing this.
Absolutely.
That's Gary Smith. Really appreciate him stopping by. By the way, season tickets are available now for as low as $10 a game. We'll come back with more of Darren and Donnick next on 102.5 The Game.
Some place to lay my bones. Lord, I got to find my rest.
Good stuff. Gary Smith, boy, active. Third hour of the program. Richard Deitch and then Gary Smith,
we
Nashville
just had
SC
lined up here,
head coach.
I know. One after another.
He was here and he was like, all right, well, you're not supposed to go to a 12-8. Let's do this. Let's do this now. Let's do it. By the way, kind of like last night, we're going to have Brian Munns stop by at 1 o'clock. With the Winnipeg Jets, so we will talk about this matchup tonight. But
is he stopping by?
Possibly stopping by.
Okay,
I was going to say that could be we could be on record pace for
the most
in-person
visits.
Guests. Yeah.
I'm kind of glad that I dressed up today.
Yeah,
a little bit.
He will absolutely be on the show. Possibly popping by Barrel House. We don't know yet.
It's possible.
Well, he should come by. We're showered and cleaned up, and we don't bite. It'll be fun. If we have to do it by phone, we have to do it by phone. But speaking of that, you did Hockey in Heels last night down in Lexus Lounge, you and C-Mace. We talked about that with him yesterday. And from the pictures that I saw, it looked like you had a packed house. Looked like a good event.
They had it in the Lexus Lounge, and it was full. It was a great crowd.
Were they there for the drinks and the food in the Lexus Lounge or the actual to hear you guys talk hockey?
Well, I'll tell you what they did. This was smart. It wasn't just C-Mace and I doing a little hockey 101 discussion. That was one part of a bigger night. They had three players there to get pictures and autographs with. Matias Ekholm, Austin Watson, Rocco Grimaldi, they were there. So you had an autograph session, you had pictures. They have what's called a station-to-station thing where you get to look at the locker room. You get to go down and see what's going on in the Zamboni area.
Yep.
You get to go out on the ice. You get to go see what happens in the behind the scenes in the meeting rooms and stuff. It's pretty cool. So you really get to learn a lot. And also part of the panel, and this is something we are going to have this group on. They had two of the players. I'm going to say wives, even though Matias Ekholm was not technically married to Ida. But they have a son together, William. They've been together for a long time. She told some hilarious stories about how they met because she is a broadcaster.
She's from Sweden?
She's from Sweden, and she did broadcasting there. Lindsay and Kara did. Ringside reporter. So she was covering.
Is that how they met?
Yes. So they were covering the World Championships. She was. And Matias was playing. I think this was in the Czech Republic. I think it was in the Czech Republic. And she said they met, and they really weren't – she wasn't that interested in him. It was so funny to hear her tell the story. And eventually, though, they became good friends, and then it evolved into what it is today. But it's interesting. Everybody's story is different, but that's pretty unique for her to be a broadcaster. So she has started a podcast with Julie Turris, married to Kyle, of course. So the two of them were up there doing a panel with Lindsay, and they had that group in stitches.
Really?
It was awesome. Yeah, it was a great part of the panel. So we need to get them on because, they want to promote
their Kyle's more
podcast.
Of a quiet,
reserved. He's very reserved.
So I'm assuming.
So we need to learn more about this relationship.
Julie is not.
And remember, they have three young kids,
yes.
Right? They had their world changed when that trade happened. You got, I think she said the ages were 4.5, 2.5, 1.5, something like that. So you got three youngsters.
That's a lot of work.
You got to move the whole tribe from Ottawa down here. That was an experience. But they've got a podcast going. Their first guest was Kristen LaViolette. So I haven't listened to it yet, but that's gonna be some good stuff. So it's gonna be just the perspective of, life in hockey. When you're married or around a hockey player and a hockey team.
That's what's cool about, I think, the dad's trip and the mom's trip, right? Because you get to learn a little bit more about these players and kind of where they came from, their background. And then that perspective, right? Now also who's at home, right? The wives, the girlfriends, the fiancés, and a little bit deeper dive into these guys. It's cool. And sounds like if you're saying that they had him in stitches, then, saying that Kyle is more quiet and reserved.
He's very reserved,
and
yeah.
It sounds like his wife is not.
No.
What you're describing.
No, she's good. We're going to have to get that duo on with us. I asked them after. I said,
the comedy at home. She's the – right? She's the one that's telling the stories and doing the talking at home.
I think so.
That's funny. That's good. See, that's what you can find out. That's what's fun about it.
Well, and this is what's tough, too. I mean – You get a lot of respect for, especially families, right? When you have kids, the house has to operate, right? I went through this. My kids are now teenagers. They do a little bit more on their own. But when you're gone, when the husband is gone, the dad's gone.
You mean like on the longest road trip of the season?
Yeah, I mean
you're gone a week and a half.
The house still has to be run.
Yeah.
You got to have your system together. So when you get home, the dad has to jump back into the system, and you can't disrupt the system, right? You have to be able to mesh in there. Otherwise, they're going to say, hey, man, we know what we're doing here. Dad, don't get in the way. So you have that's a fine art that you have to be able to do there. But it creates challenges for sure.
So are we going to have them on the show anytime soon?
Oh, yeah. Well, we got to get it done. But they said, yes, we will come on.
Oh, really?
Yes. We're going to make this happen.
Oh, we have to make this happen.
We're going to make this happen.
Good. Very good. All right, we'll come back. And like I said, Brian Munns at 1 o'clock will break down this Predators-Jets matchup coming up to kick off the fourth and final hour. We'll come back and wrap up the third hour next. We're sitting here in Bridgestone Arena, and the SEC Men's Basketball Tournament will be here not too long from now. It is going to be a hot ticket, by the way. Tennessee and Kentucky fans alone will make this a very, very difficult ticket. If you want to be a part of it and maybe get access to a suite or club seats or the Lexus Lounge for the SEC Men's Basketball Tournament here at Bridgestone Arena, you can call this number, 615-770-7800, 615-770-7800. We talked at the beginning of the show, Vanderbilt, tough loss, still winless in conference play, South Carolina undefeated. In conference play, came into conference play 5-7 on the season, and now they're 4-0. And Vanderbilt is now, along with Missouri, 0-4 in conference play, 0-4 in their next four games. Yikes! Home against Mississippi State, Tennessee, Kentucky, and Oklahoma. Their next four games.
I watched a lot of the game last night. You mentioned that hockey and heels. I came back. Otherwise, I would have gone to Memorial. to watch that game. And
your mood was better being where you were.
Yeah, it was frustrating because, you know, they had a 12-point lead in the second half, and they had seemingly control of the game. And they just I was really perplexed. You know, they just made some bad plays. You know, they had, and it was one thing or another. It wasn't one thing that happened. For example, you know, a miscommunication on a simple screen where they left a guy wide open for a three. Boom. Now the lead's down to 8, you know. Then down the court, you know, they make a silly turnover. It turns into a dunk on the other side. Now it's down to 6. You know, it was just one of those things. They kept making mistakes that allowed South Carolina to have life down the stretch.
Foul.
Well, that was a big one. Saban Lee, who is not a hothead. If you watch Saban Lee, he is not a guy that you go into a game thinking, well, he's got to control his emotions. His temper could flare. I've never seen him do that. But he got a little too excited. It wasn't anything blatant, but it was the right call. He taunted the guy. He made a great defensive play, blocked the shot. They go from, again, retaking control of the game in the final 2 minutes where they were in the driver's seat. Matt Ryan, who had not been hitting the last few games from the outside, hit a couple of big threes. Everybody's charged up. I thought at that time they were probably one stop away from winning the game. I felt like at that time. I think it was about a minute 38 when that happened. He makes a great defensive play, but then he got a little too excited. You know, it wasn't the worst taunt I've ever seen, but he jawed. And, you know, it was probably the right call. It was 2 shots and the ball. South Carolina makes the free throws. They turn around and score. And then, so a game that goes from being a 2-possession game goes right time to, you know, oh boy, it's nail body time. And you have a team that looks a little bit shaken right now in the big moments, and they did not quite make the winning plays. It was a combination of everything going wrong that could have gone wrong. And so that was a tough one. Tough one to swallow for sure, because as you mentioned, the schedule only gets tougher from here. And you got to give South Carolina credit. Here they are 4-0. Nobody thought they were going to be any good at all in the league. And they've won their first 4.
So Bryce
won all the close games.
Has landed Scottie Pippen's son, correct?
Yes.
How you feel about that? Feel good?
Well, I feel good about the way he's recruited overall.
Okay.
They are getting better level of players.
How is his son? I mean, what is he? A
4-star?
3-star?
Like
4-star?
No, he's not a 3-star. He is 4-star.
Okay.
He was
4-star.
Highly sought after.
So he was highly sought after.
Yeah.
Okay. What do you think about Scottie Pippen's comments on Zion Williams?
Williamson,
sorry.
I don't know. I didn't see him.
You know what his advice to Zion Williamson was?
Stop playing.
Hey, young man, I'd shut it down, buddy. Start worrying about your NBA career. Oh, so everybody who's excited about his kid coming to Vanderbilt, if his kid turns out to be really, really good, way better than maybe initially thought, is dad going to tell his son to shut it down?
I have no idea. I've never seen his son play. I would say this. He better be pretty good if he's compared to Zion Williamson. Now, let me say this, because I saw an article written about this.
Now I want to know
the whole idea of what might be on the horizon with college players in this era of one and done.
That's where I was going with this. So this,
because
is this going to be
the
new trend?
Because that is some speculation. That, for example, let's take Darius Garland. He got injured, and so a lot of people are saying he doesn't need to come back and prove himself at the college level. Even if he doesn't ever play again in college, he still has a very good chance of being a first-round pick. I don't know if that will play out that way, but that's what a lot of people are saying.
Well, you would have to be to come out.
He may never come back and play for Vanderbilt again, which is still, I think, unfortunately, and this is where I think the Vanderbilt team right now has to just, they can't cry over spilled milk anymore. I do think the narrative has been so much, and you listen to every broadcast, right? You have a new announcing crew for all these games. They come in and they say the same thing. Oh, they would have had Darius Garland. Oh, it's a shame they don't have Darius Garland. Well, they don't have Darius Garland anymore. They can't let that be the story the rest of the season. But right now they're playing as if, okay, that's going to be our story. Our season ended when Darius Garland got hurt.
Well,
they had started, to me, to start playing well. They beat Arizona State. They had some decent wins. I thought the chemistry was coming together. but now I think it's way too much. So they have to decide, is our story going to be our season ended when Darius got hurt, or are we going to have the story be we got the most out of what we had left once he got hurt? That was a great story because we rallied together.
Well, that storyline is going to continue. If that storyline continues, which it's going to, I'll tell you when their season is going to end. Their season is going to end right in this building at the SEC basketball tournament. That's when it's going to end, unless they win the whole thing.
Well, it's going to be.
Because that's the only way they're getting into the tournament.
Well, absolutely.
It's going to end right here at Bridgestone Arena.
No question about it. I mean, if they let it continue to be the story, they're going to have trouble winning five or six games in the league.
But they have no chance of getting into the tournament.
This league is too tough. If you wallow, then you will get eaten up by these teams, because South Carolina is way better than people thought. They had those guys down at the bottom of the league.
They were 5-7 coming into conference play.
Exactly. Kermit Davis is doing a masterful job at Ole Miss. We know the rest of the
Will
league
Wade
is good.
At LSU.
Talented. Talent.
By the way, Mississippi State, Tennessee, Kentucky.
Loaded.
Next three games. Could be 0-7 in conference play.
So they have to decide how they're going to deal with it. That's a great mental challenge.
So I want to know, though, what you think. Because is this where this is headed? Like, here you have Scottie Pippen going, if I'm Zion Williamson, young man, I'd shut it down, call it a career at Duke. Start thinking about your NBA career. You're crazy to keep playing. We've already seen this in college. We know. We don't need to go to the list. We all know the
You're
list.
Talking about football.
Yeah, in football.
Shutting down for the bowl.
Christian McCaffrey, Bryce Love, all these guys just saying, yeah, I'm done.
Well, let's take Zion Williamson. And I know there will be gasps among Duke fans.
And by the way, wasn't it Christian McCaffrey? Would we say he's not the one that really started this? Wasn't he kind of the guy that, I mean, I know a lot have done it, but wasn't he the guy that
I think that
really
was the first time it became a big story.
Like, whoa.
It became a big story that a guy that good, that important of a player. Now, they were playing in what, the Sun Bowl? They weren't in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah. Right.
You know, that's so, and it wasn't a national championship kind of game. But if Zion Williamson today decided, I don't need to play anymore, I'll be the first pick in the draft. He'll be the first pick in the draft, right?
No matter what he does the rest of the way.
So that is something that people are speculating. I hope it doesn't go down that road.
But it looks like there's a real shot of it.
Really?
By the way,
just because Scottie Pippen says maybe that's a good suggestion?
Ben Simmons did it. That's exactly what he did. He shut it down, and he got picked number one
overall.
But he
did get hurt, though, right?
Michael Porter Jr. shut it down.
But he was hurt.
At his credit, he did come back at the very end.
He came back.
At the very end.
But he was. If you have an injury, that's one thing. But if
Ben Simmons shut it down. He shut it down at LSU.
He wasn't injured?
This season is going nowhere. I'm done.
Well, that was a situation, too, where –
Well, you saw the documentary. I mean, he blatantly said it in the documentary. Well, I'm only here because I have to be here.
How Ben Simmons, how they couldn't win more games and have a guy like that was not a good reflection on
– He might have – should have waited for Will Wade to be the coach.
Him or his coaching staff. But college basketball has to think about this, because they can sit there and go, like a guy like Coach Mike Krzyzewski, you think he's going to stand for – he doesn't want players that are – got to even think about that. You would never go down that road of having it.
I'm just saying, before you get everybody gets all hot and bothered about Scottie Pippen's kid coming here, you might want to be careful what you wish for, because if the kid turns out to be really good, it could be a double-edged sword. Like, wow, he's awesome. Oh, is dad going to tell him to shut it down now?
Well, there's two ways of looking at this, the Vanderbilt perspective and the issue if this goes that way. Honestly, I don't know that it's time to really panic, and if you're Duke or you're any program like Kentucky that has players like this. I guess monkey see, monkey do. I mean, sometimes it would take one or two guys to do it, and then it could be a domino effect, right? More and more people could say, well, so-and-so is doing it, so maybe I should do it. I'm just as good as that guy. I'm going to be a high lottery pick. I hope it doesn't get to that.
By the way,
but
if I was Rick
Barnes, with the one-and-done system, you leave yourself open in the one-and-done system.
If I'm Rick
for
Barnes,
this to happen,
I'm
right?
Like, Scottie Pippen is delivering some great advice. Great advice. I endorse his message. If I was Rick Barnes, I would do that. I would tell everybody how smart Scottie Pippen is, because You take Zion Williamson out. Already Jones, who knows when he's coming back? All of a sudden, that changes everything for Duke, who is definitely one of the teams, if not the team, to beat when it's all said and done.
But this is what I think helps in basketball. Rarely are you going to have an injury that long-term makes you a different player than you are. Almost every injury you can recover 100% from, right? So why not play?
Well, Jones' case, he dislocated his shoulder.
Right.
I mean, I've been through
but
that.
But he will be fully recovered from that when the time comes.
Well, yeah, but that's not an easy comeback. You're out a while.
Right.
Months.
He's out as long as he needs to be out.
I'm just saying that's not a reason.
But the fear of having an injury like that, it's not jeopardizing, in my opinion, it's not jeopardizing his NBA career.
No, I'm not even talking about that with him. I'm just saying he might not be able to return. That injury is not an easy injury to come back from.
It's definitely not. So this season is an issue for Duke. But I'm just saying if I'm advising Zion Williamson, what are the chances that he could have an injury that would have him not be the first-round pick or the first pick in the first round?
ACL out for the year.
I'd still draft him first overall.
Well, you lose him for the first year.
So what?
Okay.
I get Zion Williamson.
Okay.
I mean, he's a special talent. That's my point.
Okay. We'll come back. Brian Munns, color commentator for the Jets. We'll talk about Winnipeg, the opponent of the Predators tonight, next to kick off the fourth and final hour of Darren and Donnie.